Pray then like this: Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we have forgiven our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. That's a prayer that has been studied and recited for many, many years. And as I come to that, I think about my own life. Growing up, there was never a time where I didn't know where my next meal was coming from. Now, I don't know if my parents ever hid financial problems from us or not, but as far as I was concerned, I never had need, never had want. And as an adult, I have continued that. Not to say that it won't happen one day, but to say thus far in my life, I have always known where the next meal is coming from. And thus, when we come to this prayer, and in the midst of it, Jesus says, "Give us this day our daily bread." Many times, perhaps you like me are tempted just to kind of read over that and to think, well, yes, that's a recognition that God has given us great blessings. Now we talk to Him about spiritual matters. But yet, as most things, all things that are recorded by Jesus, there is deep, deep theological significance. And though on the surface it may appear that it's a fairly normal statement and one that we can understand and then move on, when we begin to unpack this idea and begin to think about the implications that it has on our life, this simple statement, "Give us this day our daily bread," takes on significant meaning. And so this morning I'd like to talk about that. That in this statement we find much more than a recognition that God provides, but a recognition that what Jesus is calling on us to do in this statement is to completely alter the way we think about life. And so as we consider that, I want us to understand how you and I not only need to, but must develop a daily bread kind of life to be the kind of people that God desires in our attitude toward Him. Now, as we begin to think about these things this morning, I want us to drop way back to the Old Testament, because much of what Jesus is saying in this simple line has a whole lot of preface in the nation of Israel in their early days. You'll recall that as they were on their way to Canaan, that they began to complain for food, and God says, "I'm going to take care of you." And He tells them, "I'm going to give you your daily bread." And you remember how He made this happen. We see in Exodus chapter 16 and verse 4, the Lord said to Moses, "Behold, I'm about to rain bread from heaven for you. And the people shall go out and gather a day's portion every day, that I may test them whether they will walk in my law or not." There's the command of what God, or the statement of what God is going to do. And it's very interesting how many times that idea is elaborated on, especially in the words of Moses near the time that the people actually are going to go into the land of Canaan. As we look to Moses' final speeches over in the book of Deuteronomy, he says in chapter 8 and verse 16, "The Lord fed you in the wilderness with manna that your fathers did not know, that He might humble you and test you." We found that out from the original statement. But look at what Moses adds: "To do you good in the end." I want you to keep that in mind, that as God looked at this occasion where He was providing daily bread for His people, one of the things that He said, one of the purposes, was to make sure that they knew that He was doing good. Interestingly, the psalmist will elaborate on this a bit later, when in 78, verses 24 and 25, the psalmist says, "He rained down on them manna to eat and gave them the grain of heaven. Man ate of the bread of angels. He sent them food in abundance." Now, we take all of this and we put it together. And what's the lesson to be learned? Well, there's a whole lot of answers to that question. There are a number of lessons that we see, but one of the greatest lessons that we find God teaching His people then is, "I can provide for you. If you are in the wilderness, I can provide. If it looks like you don't have anything in front of you to eat, I can provide for you." And thus Moses elaborates on that, and the psalmist elaborates on that. And as we look at the Bible, God makes that point over and over again. And I tell you, one of the most impressive things about God as we consider this point is that He provides even for those who don't respect Him. That there are those who pay no homage to God, but yet what does He do for them? He provides. Jeremiah told us that even about the nation of Israel as they were walking in the ways of the devil. He said, the Lord speaking here, "How can I pardon you? Your children have forsaken me and have sworn by those who are no gods. When I fed them to the full, they committed adultery." God says, "I provided for these people. They were going against me. I made sure they had plenty to eat. Yet look at how they acted in return." Yet the point I want us to see is that God was willing to give to them. That point brought out even perhaps more clearly when Jesus says in Matthew chapter 5, here in the sermon that we've referred to already, verse 45, talking about God, He says He makes His sun rise on the evil and on the good and sends rain on the just and the unjust. Here is God the provider that even for those who will not give Him respect, He's giving. But that's not the point I want us to emphasize. How much more can we see this as those who trust Him? That's long been the case. In fact, as we return back to the book of Psalms, listen to what David says in the 37th Psalm. He says, "I have been young and now am old, yet I have not seen the righteous forsaken or his children begging for bread." David says, "I have seen when the Lord makes a promise to His people, the Lord is faithful to that promise. And if God says He's going to give to His people, that's exactly what He's going to do." And of course, Jesus, speaking in that passage that Anthony just read to us, says, "Don't worry about these things. Don't be anxious about these things, because God is there to provide. He gives to the animal world. He gives to the plant world. And if you think He provides for them in a very good way, how much more is He going to provide for those who are righteous, who give their lives to Him?" So what's the point that we make from all of this? Well, as we look at manna, and as we look at what Moses says, and as we look at what the psalmist says, this is laying a foundation for us to better understand how you and I can live this daily bread kind of life. So as we consider that concept of daily bread living, what does that mean must change as far as the way we think about things? Well, I think the first thing that should come to mind is that when we're living this kind of lifestyle, what we're talking about here is developing a faith in God and depending that He's going to provide for us. When we say we know where our next meal is coming, the only way we can really make that statement is when we have faith that God is going to provide as He has in the past. But yet sometimes this is where the biggest problem occurs. Even from the very beginning, we see the nation of Israel having trouble with that. You remember when the instructions were given as far as what they were to do with the manna? Says, "When the dew has gone up, there was on the face of the wilderness a fine flake-like thing, fine as frost on the ground. When the people of Israel saw it, they said to one another, 'What is it?' For they did not know what it was. Moses said to them, 'It is the bread that the Lord has given you to eat.' And Moses said to them, 'Let no one leave any of it over till the morning.' But they did not listen to Moses. Some left part of it till the morning, and it bred worms and stank." And Moses was angry with it. That sounds like such a simple matter. Why would God be upset about such a thing as this? What did the people do? Well, first of all, they disobeyed. But what was their motive in disobeying? It was the fact that if they collected too much, there was a reflection in their minds that maybe God isn't going to be faithful to us. Maybe God isn't going to provide this tomorrow, and we've got to get all we can. The same problem was seen when God sent the quail. The people ate like there was no tomorrow after God had promised, "I'm going to send this to you for a month." And God was angry with them. Why? Because God had sent this to test them. Will you obey me? But even more than that, will you trust me enough to obey me. Do you believe that I am going to provide what you need in your life? Listen to what Moses said a little bit later on. This idea that God was wanting to teach them this lesson. Chapter 8 and verse 3, he said, "And he humbled you and let you hunger and fed you with manna which you did not know, nor did your fathers know, that he might make you know that man does not live by bread alone, but man lives by every word that comes from the mouth of God." You see, the point behind all of this was you've got to trust me. You've got to develop the kind of relationship with me that when you consider even the most basic sustenance of life, you can count on me to give it. And thus, you can then focus on the message that I'm giving you, which is far more important than what you fill your stomach with, but what's going to fill your soul. Thus, that was the lesson that God wanted them to learn. But what else do we see as a problem here? Not only do we see this idea of collecting too much, but we also see the problem, and God warned them about this, is that when I give you these things, it can lead to forgetfulness of where it came from. He gave them this warning before they ever even went into the land of Canaan. You remember that? Deuteronomy chapter 6. He says, "I'm going to give you houses full of all good things that you did not fill, and cisterns that you did not dig, and vineyards and olive trees that you did not plant. And when you eat and are full, then take care lest you forget the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery." Here's a different side of faith. It's not the idea of where is my next meal going to come from, but the idea of the God who gives bread daily, many times gives it in abundance and excess. And he says to the people, when you get into this land, you better be very careful lest you forget where you got all of these things. And that didn't take long, did it? When they moved into those Canaanite houses and started picking from the Canaanite vineyards, it wasn't long before God was forgotten. But now to bring all of this point a little bit more relevant to us, I must ask us this question. Are we full? When we think about the abundance that God has given to us, is there a warning there for us also? And the answer for that is yes. You remember what Paul wrote to the Philippians? He says, "For many of whom I have often told you and now tell you even with tears, walk as enemies of the cross. Their end is destruction. Their God is their belly." That sounds a whole lot like what God warned the children of Israel. Here are people who have allowed the things of this life, the fullness of this life, to become the main focus. And because of that, they have lost sight of a daily bread kind of life. Perhaps you and I would do well to think about a different rendering of this statement by the Lord, "Give us this day our daily bread." And to think about it from the standpoint of without God, we know there is no daily bread. When we forget God, we are forgetting the source of where it came from. And thus, counting our blessings is good stuff to do even when we're not tempest-tossed on life's billows. When things are going well, we're counting the blessings that God has given us. We're living a life that shows faith and dependence in Him. And when we recognize that and we request these things from Him and we thank God for these provisions, it illustrates our faith in Him. How oftentimes the psalmist illustrated that. One example in Psalm 104. "You cause the grass to grow for the livestock and plants for man to cultivate, that he may bring forth food from the earth and wine to gladden the heart of man, oil to make his face shine and bread to strengthen man's heart." Here is the concept of understanding the kind of faith and the kind of trust and the kind of dependence that is necessary for this foundational attitude of trusting that God is going to provide. But let's take it a step forward. Not only do we have this kind of faith, but I want us to think about what it means when God does give us in excess of that daily bread. What does that mean for us Well, that means that you and I are called on to very much beware of the sin of materialism and to replace those temptations with generosity. Let me ask you something. How many people have you ever known who have confessed to the sin of materialism? We think about even when sins are acknowledged before a congregation. I can think about times when people have come forward with just a kind of a generic, I'm not living like I ought to, or I'm involved in a relationship I ought not to be, or I'm having problems with alcohol and drugs. And have we ever heard someone say, I am plagued with the sin of materialism? I don't know that I've ever heard that. But when I think about that, to requote a phrase that was misquoted but yet has become a part of our vernacular, I have met the enemy and he is me. When I think about materialism and when I look at my own life, I understand someone who needs to be confessing of that sin. And I have a feeling that I don't stand alone in that, that as we look at our lives, we look at the excess that God has given us beyond just our daily bread. What is that saying about me and the way that I deal with it? You'll remember that Jesus dealt with this in a parable that he gave, a simple parable, where he talks about a farmer who had a very good year and he sat back and he said, "Soul, you have many things provided, not only for today, but for years to come. So I'll tear down my barns and build bigger barns and I can sit back and relax and be merry." What's the point of all of that? Jesus is doing two things, at least in that parable. The first thing he's saying is you better be careful when your full belly is leading you to feel independent. You better be very careful that when you have all of these things, that you don't lose sight of that concept of a daily bread kind of life where God is giving you everything you need. And the second part of that parable comes in the statement of God when he says, "You fool, this very night your soul will be required of you." God says, what I have given, I can take. And thus Jesus is saying here that we never allow ourselves to get to that point where we have such abundance, where like the Israelites, we're living in houses we didn't build and eating from vineyards we didn't plant, or as Paul wrote to the Philippians of making your belly your God, you and I must beware that we are not allowing all of this abundance to make us forget who provides, to make us forget that God is in control. But with that realization, that leads us to a very important concept, and that is that we never become like this farmer in getting to the point that we store things up so that everybody can be impressed about how successful we are. And that's a real danger, because humans base a lot of the things they believe on the exterior, on what's seen. And thus we get this very fixed in our mind where if we're going to impress someone, we've got to allow them to see all of these things that we've built up, all of these things that we've done to succeed in life. And many times that's done with our stuff. I remember several years ago, one of the container commercials came out with an advertisement, and it showed this kind of family that was in panic and their house was just full, and they said, "What are we going to do with all of our stuff?" And of course, the object of the commercial was buy the product to put your stuff in. But I remember how that commercial ended. They said, "Now, what are we going to do with all this room?" You remember the line that followed? "We need to go buy more stuff." Isn't that the concept of a materialistic society? That we build the big barn so that we can fill the barns with lots of stuff and that we can impress others with what we have, that's a danger. That's what happens when we lose our daily bread kind of lifestyle. So that leads us to a question then. What about the excess? I don't know your financial situation, but my guess is there's probably not a person here who is wondering, where's my lunch going to come from today? In the sense of, how am I going to get it? Where am I going to buy it? What am I going to find to pay for it? God has indeed blessed us far above and beyond what we need for daily sustenance. So the question is, what do we do about that? What do we do with all of this excess? Well, I'm not going to give you specific instruction here with that. That's something very much between a person and God. But I do want us to take us to two examples. And I want us to first look at a group that's going to show us an answer to this. Yet ironically, this was a group in very deep poverty. Look with me over to 2 Corinthians chapter 8. 2 Corinthians chapter 8. Paul here is writing to the Corinthians again, encouraging them to finish the gift that probably had been begun about a year before this. So in other words, it had not come to fulfillment yet. I want you to listen to what he tells them by way of encouragement here. He says, "We want you to know, brothers, about the grace of God that has been given among the churches of Macedonia. For in a severe test of affliction, their abundance of joy and their extreme poverty have overflowed in a wealth of generosity on their part. For they gave according to their means, as I can testify, and beyond their means of their own accord, begging us earnestly for the favor of taking part in the relief of the saints. And this, not as we expected, but they gave themselves first to the Lord and then by the will of God to us." Have you ever just let that passage sink in? I'll have to tell you, I was privileged to sit through the class here in the auditorium last session where Carl was teaching on 2 Corinthians. And I think this passage hit me like it never had before. And I don't know what the reason for that was. But I thought how many times I've heard this used. Someone reads it before the contribution. We talk about this and we move on. But I'm wondering if we've really got the point of the passage. Here are people who themselves probably could have been worthy objects of charity. Paul says they were in deep poverty. He doesn't just stop by saying, well, they were poor or they just got by. They were in deep poverty. And they heard of people who were in need. And Paul basically says, I didn't go to them and ask them to send money. They came to me, and they didn't only come to me, they came to me and begged me for the opportunity to give. Can you imagine that kind of mindset? Well, yes. If we take that phrase that Paul also says about them, they first gave themselves to the Lord. Here were people who had barely enough to get by, and Paul says they put themselves in need so that they could help someone else who was in need. That's what we do with the excess. When our barns become full, we look for those opportunities. I think most of us, if somebody comes along and asks us for help, most are willing to give that help, glad to, like those occasions. But how many times are we looking for those opportunities of not someone coming and saying, hey, there's a guy over there that needs some help. Can you do something about it? But looking for those occasions. That's how we keep the daily bread lifestyle. Now, let's contrast that. I don't know how rich the Corinthians were, but they were certainly richer than the group we're reading about here in chapter 8. And so as Paul is admonishing them to finish their gift and to give, listen to what he says. Verse 6, the point is this. I'm in chapter 9, verse 6. The point is this. Whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly. And whoever sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. Each one must give as he has decided in his heart, not reluctantly or under compulsion. For God loves a cheerful giver, and God is able to make all grace abound to you, so that having all sufficiency in all things at all times, you may abound in every good work. As it is written, He is distributed freely to those who have given to the poor. His righteousness endures forever. He who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food will supply and multiply your seed for sowing and increase the harvest of your righteousness. You will be enriched in every way to be generous in every way, which through us will produce thanksgiving to God. Now you listen to that. And Paul says to the Corinthians, when God gives you an excess, He has expectations of you, not by compulsion. He didn't say, when I give you this amount, you make sure you give this amount back. He didn't do that for us. But He says, when I give you this, this is for you to show generosity, somewhat akin to when God gave the manna. He said, I'm doing this for your good to test you. Wouldn't it have been wonderful if Jesus could have given a parable about a farmer who had a bumper crop year and he says, soul, look at the goods you have before you. Let's get busy helping others with this. Let's get busy giving to those who are in need. And thus, when I look at my life, I've got to ask myself the question. And I'm going to tell you, when I ask myself the question, I don't really like the answer too much. When I say, which group best describes me? Those poor folks who were begging for the opportunity to give someone else, to someone else, or the richer folks who had plenty but were being a little slow in getting all of this together? But I believe that's what the apostle is calling on us to ask. While this passage certainly can be used to show us examples of our giving as a congregation, it can also show us very much indeed about the kind of spirit we must have as we think about giving to others. So what does it depend on? What's going to cause me to answer one way or the other? Well, let's go back to our points based on the amount of faith I have. Am I going to say, well, you know, I've got to store up for retirement and the future and college education. I've got to get all this going. Well, all that may be good and necessary. But is that to the exclusion of helping those who are in need? Is that to the exclusion of going out and finding people in need? When I think about that question, it then leads me to ask myself the question, am I guilty of that materialism? Am I more like the farmer, or am I more like these poor folks that Paul describes? That's going to give me the answer to my question. And when I look at that answer, it's going to direct me in the way that I need to go. But let me lead that into one more point, and that's residing in the present. When we look at having a daily bread kind of lifestyle, it's not only developing faith and dependence. It's not only making sure that we're generous and getting rid of materialism. It's also understanding where we need to be. And again, I imagine if we're having complete transparency here, many of us spend a lot of time living in the future. Now, we'll oftentimes encourage people, don't live in the past. You know, don't try to redo all of those things that are already done. We probably need to have the same admonitions about living in the future. Because the future is not a very nice neighborhood to live in. It does one of two things. It leads to undue fear. How am I going to eat? What am I going to do? Where's my money going to come from when I retire? How am I going to send my kids to college? How are we going to afford a house? You know, all these things. But it's also a bad neighborhood of leading perhaps to a false sense of security. When I get old, I'll have plenty stored up. I can travel. I can do all these things. Everything will be good in my life. Both of those are very dangerous neighborhoods. So if you and I are going to develop this kind of daily bread living, it means we live for today. Now that doesn't mean we can't think about the future, but it means we live for today. And that's exactly what Jesus told us. As He came to the grand finale of that passage about not being anxious, He says, but seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, And all these things will be added to you. What shall we eat? What shall we drink? What shall we wear? Therefore, do not be anxious about tomorrow, for tomorrow will be anxious for itself. Sufficient for the day is its own trouble. We kind of redo that last statement, don't we? And we say, don't borrow tomorrow's trouble. That's what Jesus is saying. If I'm going to live that kind of daily bread life, it means this. Today is what I have. Today is the only thing I'm guaranteed of. And therefore, I must not waste an ounce of today worrying about what's going to happen tomorrow. And I realize how much easier that is said than done. But nonetheless, in that simple statement, when Jesus says, give us this day our daily bread, what He's saying is that we trust God to provide the provisions that we need for today. And that's what this attitude calls on us to do. So therefore, it's very much a matter of perspective. Think about what the Hebrew writer admonished in the 13th chapter when he says, keep your life free from the love of money and be content with what you have. That's a perspective. I'm content. I'm not going to spend my time worrying about tomorrow because I trust that God has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. Several years ago, I heard a man talking. He was talking to another man, but loudly enough where others in the room could hear. And he made a statement that just stuck with me. He said, I had a lot of stock, but I was up at night worrying about it, always looking at what was going on. He said, I sold every share. That was the right thing for him to do. If here was something that had his life in such turmoil and such worry that he couldn't even sleep at night, fearing what tomorrow might bring on the stock market, he said, enough is enough. And that's exactly what this verse is calling on us to do. Not to have such a thirst for the excess. Not to have such a thirst for building up and storing up. But to find the contentment that will say, I trust God when He says, I will not leave you and I will not forsake you. And if you and I can develop that mindset, we can focus on the things that we need to focus on about the future. And that's where we're going to spend our eternity. Isn't it interesting, building on the idea of manna, manna very much a shadow of Jesus Christ. Jesus said to them, I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me shall not hunger, and whoever believes in me shall never thirst. Jesus says that just as Israel needed to trust God that He would provide, He tells us, I am the true manna. I am the bread of life. I am the one who sustains. And if you and I can get over our materialistic ways, and we can get over this fear of what the future might bring or what might happen, it is then we can focus on that statement. It is then we can feast upon the real bread of life. And as the Bible draws to its close, very interestingly, as the Lord is giving messages to those seven churches, He goes back to manna one more time. And in Revelation chapter 2 and verse 17, He says, He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. To the one who conquers, I will give some of the hidden manna. Notice He didn't say, you need to spend a lot of time building up excess for the future. You need to spend a lot of time concerned about your 401k and your retirement. He says, to the one who conquers, that's the one who can be assured the bread is there. That's the one who can be assured that the hidden manna will be very well received and made known. So with all of that being said, the question I must ask myself is what kind of life I'm living. I can deceive myself, but when I take a good hard look at this, I've got to come to a conclusion. And if that conclusion is unsatisfactory, it means that I change. And rather than spending so much time thinking about me and what I want and what I think I need, to instead spend time thinking about God as the provider, to pray for our daily provisions, and then get busy using the excess to glorify God and to bring thanksgiving to Him. And if we want to talk about someone who's given in excess, that's God. Here we are, a bunch of folks who deserted Him, abandoned Him. And He said, while you were still sinners, I sent my Son to die for you so that you could be reconciled to Me. What a rich gift. A gift that will provide for the day of eternity. And thus this morning, that gift is open for any who have yet to receive it. If you're not a Christian, think about the grace that God has shown. Think about what He's provided, where you can come and repent of your sins and confess His good name and, trusting in Him, be buried in the waters of baptism, raised up so that your sins are forgiven. If you need to do that this morning, now's the time. Or if your life just hasn't been lived as it ought to be, and there's something we can pray with you about this morning, we'll do that. Whatever it takes to trust Him for today, so that in that day of eternity we can have full faith and confidence that He will be with us. Now's the time to accept it. Won't you come as we stand and sing together?